You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 423. Today is Sunday, October 14th, 2018, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt, and before we start, please help out the podcast by subscribing, write a review, share links on Twitter and Facebook. If you don't, Kurt is going to add a weekly segment to the show talking about his fantasy football team. I know, it is good stuff.
Jay Ajayi killing me.
Oh, you see? You see, there's a sneak preview there, folks.
Sneak precursor.
Multiply that times 1,000.
All right, guys. In tonight's show, we will wrap up the season with some of our favorite moments, team awards, and predictions for next year. But first, a quick break. So, guys, such a magical season. I thought that we could start to look back by picking some of our favorite moments of the year. And, Ham, let's start with you. Favorite moment from 2018.
Okay, well, my favorite moment was a series, and it was the series with the Diamondbacks on the heels of that just crushing series sweep at the hand of the Red Sox, particularly that Game 3 where ex-Brave fan favorite Brandon Phillips hit a two-run homer in the top of the ninth to beat us. And so, you know, that was such a gut punch. We were still at a point in the season where the Phillies were right there with us, sort of, but they were, you know, they were not fading yet. And we were headed west for a six-game stretch against the Diamondbacks and then the Giants, and we just turned it around. We just took control of the situation and won, you know. The bullpen gave up a lead against Arizona, and we went down. But then we came back. Dansby scored a wild pitch. We won 7-6. We lost the next one, but then we had another dramatic win, and then a dramatic win on Sunday to win that series 3-4, and then we swept the Giants in San Francisco. And that was, for me, the turning point in the season and my favorite moment when that, you know, to go as low as we did and losing to the Red Sox in the way that we did to just really put it to both of those teams on the road was great. That was my favorite.
Yeah, there were so many. And there was a moment that didn't make my list, but in that same series, that defensive play that Dansby made out in, you know, in the grass.
The Saturday night game. Yeah, absolutely.
That Saturday night game and threw that guy out at home. And yes, I'm with you, Hammy. That was one of, you know, a few moments where things were about to go off the rails and they just righted the ship and kept this thing moving. Yeah, really magical stuff. Curtis, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, the Dansby play was certainly one of the top ones. I still love the Markakis walk-off on the game one. We talked about it before. I really feel like that set the tone for the season. Certainly felt like it set the tone for our games against Philadelphia, which played a huge role in us winning the division. I loved when Snitker sort of broke down when he was talking about defending Acuna when he got hit by the pitch.
I want to stop you there. That was one of mine as well. Not only, you know, following on the heels of him coming out on the field after Acuna getting beaned and being like the fieriest guy.
Yeah,
out there.
So enraged.
And then, yes, what was a teary post-game comments talking about, you know, these are my guys, these are my kids. I mean, it was incredible. Sorry, Kurt.
That's okay. Acuna had a bunch that whole stretch when he was hitting all those leadoff home runs, the grand slam, obviously, in the postseason, which was really the highlight of the entire postseason series. There was another one, but the energy, the love the team had for each other that was sort of pervasive through the entire year. It was fun, but I those are some of the highlights. The Dansby play really, it sort of got overshadowed, but it was really a brilliant defensive play on both ends to make the play up the middle and then to have the wherewithal to turn around and throw home.
Well, yeah.
And to gun Nick Ahmed out. And it was just, like Ham, you said, that series also ended Arizona's season.
Yep. And that was so pivotal. I mean, that was the most important game of the season at that time. And for Dansby, with the pressure on, to have the presence of mind to make that play was just amazing.
Yeah, a bit of a season changer maybe, right? If he doesn't make that play and Arizona wins that game, Sunday could go very differently. Like, yeah, it was monumental, that play. The one I'll add, because my others got mentioned, is coming off the Braves sweeping St. Louis on the road and then going to New York to Yankee Stadium to play the Yankees. And that first game where it went to extras and Acuna hit that home run right over the glove, you know, right over Stanton's glove to win that game. And I think it was 11. I mean, I just remember, you know, feeling on top of the world about the team, that we had just gone in there and beaten the Yankees. And that was just one of my favorite moments, without a doubt.
They gave us a lot. I mean, they would get down and just always find ways to sort of claw back. They certainly kept it interesting all season long.
Well, right. I mean, all the Culberson late inning magic. Yeah. Dansby had a number of, forget that defensive play, but a number of offensive sort of, you know, close and late magic throughout the season. Yeah, really just so many.
And
just,
well, and sorry, Ham, but there, and also the fact that there were so many guys, you know, we talked about some plays, but I mean, they're not where they are if Preston Tucker doesn't do what he does at the beginning of the season, or Ryan Flaherty, or starts from, you know, Bryce Wilson and guys. Colby Howard won his game. He wasn't great, but that's a win that they got. You know, I mean, there were just
Brandon McCarthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Who went 3-0 or something at
First month. Yeah. Amazing.
And it was all against the Phillies. I mean, there were contributions by guys up and down the roster that you were sort of forgotten guys at the end of the season, but certainly played huge, huge roles at the beginning of the season.
You know, when Flaherty was leading the league in average the first month.
Yeah. Right.
So insane.
I also thought it was great that we got a lot of, I mean, we knew we were going to get a lot of first time major league debut starts from some guys. But if you think about what Soroka did, you mentioned Allard,
Tukey,
Kyle Wright. Didn't Kyle Wright get a start? I feel like there's a fourth guy.
Well, Bryce Wilson,
who all won them. And we're all like, you know, because you could see those starts coming up like, oh, well, they got shelled first start, they'll move on. But like, they certainly were exciting for the future. I mean, all those guys look good in five innings or whatever they threw. Soroka looked amazing. So we got a little sneak preview of what's to come, and it was great. It was stellar.
Yeah. We didn't talk about, Fulte with an almost complete game, Newcomb with that almost complete game against the Dodgers.
Yeah, the almost no-hitter.
Almost no-hitter, right, exactly. Yeah, just amazing. All right, so Curtis, let's talk about what do you think was Anthopoulos's best move of the year?
Overall, he made a lot of really clever moves. And maybe the only one that didn't work out was Jose Bautista, but even that was worth a flyer at the time.
Define didn't work out.
Right.
Right, it gave Hammy a lot of joy.
Yeah,
it did.
I got a lot of swag.
Right. He's still got that poster in his room.
Yeah, in the jersey and the hat and pants.
Ham's bought every Jose Bautista jersey for the season. So he's got like 12 now.
Yep.
But I think the best move, it was almost a throwaway at the time, but it's the signing of Anibal Sanchez, who ended up being, you know, the guy that started the second game of the postseason for us and just was amazing. I mean, his record it was only 7-6, but it was a 2.83 ERA, 3.62 FIP. WHIP was just over one. It was just amazing for a guy who seemingly was sort of washed up. I mean, the year before in Detroit, he was 3-7 with a 6.41 ERA. The year before that, 7-13 with a 5.87 ERA. So, you know, it's one of those guys that you just sort of hope maybe has something left because you need a veteran starter on the team. And what he provided for us was you can't even give it enough exemplaries. It was so important what he provided to us for the year. And I mean, like watching him have conversations with young starters, I think he really helped Tehran a lot. And when that stretch, when Tehran was pitching so great, I think so much of that went to Anibal Sanchez. And I think that was the best move that Anthopoulos made this year.
Yeah. And, you know, Fulte, obviously the best pitcher by WAR and a lot of other measurables on the team. But Anibal was the steadiest guy.
Yeah, the rock.
He really was. And Kurt, that the Anibal signing is mine as well. It was March 16th, and I'd forgotten this. I went back and was looking at transactions for this, and it was a minor league contract. He just got invited to spring training. I mean, just really so great. Hammy, what do you got on Anthopoulos?
I like all of those. I mean, I had a sense all year that Anthopoulos had a very clear sense of what our practical ceiling was as a team all season long. I think he had a really clear sense of that. And I think he believed our ceiling was to win the NL East. He invested just as much as he needed to in order to reach that ceiling and sort of maximize the talent we had this season. I don't think he was, even if he had wanted to, he was going to be in a position where he could buy our way to being able to beat the Dodgers in seven games or the Brewers or the Astros, you know, in the postseason. And so I think his best move is he didn't try to do that, that he didn't go after Machado or DeGrom or push chips in, you know, to try to buy our way to relevancy or competitiveness this season when it wasn't there. So it's sort of a cop-out, but I think his best move was not doing anything, right? And in the time when he could have maybe tried to make a big splashy free agent move, we gave up nothing. I mean, we've discussed this on a lot of the past shows. We got Venters and Brock on with international money, right? Or slot money. We got rid of some, you know, Whistler to get Gossman. And then there was some, you know, getting Duda and others. I mean, he was just very shrewd and literally gave up nothing to do that. So that's the move. Doing nothing was the best move of the season.
Giving up none of the prospect capital, as he liked to say.
Yeah.
All right, so guys, we will get back to this year toward the end of the show with our end of the year awards, but I want to get to some predictions for next year. And Ham, I'll start with you. Name your starting five starters, the starting pitchers, on opening day next year.
Folty, Newcomb, Soroka, Fried, Toussaint.
All right, Curtis, what do you got?
I have Folty, Newcomb, Tukey, Sirotka, Gossman.
Oh, God, Gossman.
All right, so I've got Folty, Gossman, Sirotka, Tukey, free agent. Like, I think one of Sirotka or Newcomb will probably get traded. Like, I really think they're going to try to trade for a guy. Like, I am all about getting Madison Bumgarner here next year.
Oh.
I just think that would be fantastic. And it's going to take one of those guys, right? You know, Gohara and Newcomb for Bumgarner. I would take that.
Well, we have so much, right? I mean, at some point, Bryce Wilson, Colby Allard. I mean, we don't have enough slots for all these guys. And obviously, if we can make the bullpen better with them, that's great. But
yeah. I mean, I don't believe Tehran's going to be – am I blowing another question? No. I don't believe Tehran's going to be here. I don't believe Anibal's going to get re-signed. Unless maybe, you know, maybe Anibal's like just there for depth or something. But yeah, I really think I don't think it's going to be five guys that we have on the team today. I think there's going to be a free agent or a trade. Do you guys not see that? I mean, you guys obviously picked five guys here, but don't you think there's the possibility they bring in a veteran to sort of stabilize things some? And a killer, you know? I mean, Bumgarner's such a killer.
Yeah, I do. I if you were to sort of target where they really need to make moves to take a step to the next level. I think it's obviously they're going to have to replace Markakis in the outfield. I think they're going to have to make a big move there. I don't know if it's Bryce Harper, big move, but it's something. A starting pitcher, I think, is absolutely on that list. And then, you know, basically three or four guys in their bullpen.
Yeah.
And I think if you pull those moves off and they have $100 million or something that they can work with, $85 million basically, because of where their payroll is going to be.
No. Well, I mean, but it depends on where you look, right? But getting, you know, shedding some contracts, it's about $45 million of non sort of spoken for money.
Oh, I thought it was. I thought their payroll dropped down to like $60 million after the end of this year when everybody comes off.
No. With raises and arbitration and the guys that are still on, what I've seen is 45 to 50. DOB actually was on Twitter Sunday, the day we're recording this, saying that he thinks after arbitration and raises, they're going to have 30 to 35 to play with, which is a little depressing, frankly.
Yeah, because that means you're not
that's
getting
Harper.
Bryce Harper.
Well, or you're
well,
only
right,
getting
it would
Bryce
be,
Harper.
It would be Harper. Yeah, exactly. All right. So, Curtis, true or false, Dansby is on the opening is an opening day starter next year.
True. I think that they believe that it's too soon to give up on Dansby. And I don't think they're going to give up on him after an injury, too. So unless they somehow sign Machado and bring him in here, I think that Dansby is the shortstop.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that we've heard them talk about how much they value defense, and Dansby brings elite defense, and I just don't think he's going anywhere.
Well, true. Could we have too many other holes that we have to fill that we don't also need to go look trying to fill shortstop? And why make a lateral move for someone who's a fan favorite who is getting better, right? I still think that Dansby has room to grow and will get better.
All right, Curtis, Suzuki is on the 25-man next year.
Well, we just sort of talked about this, that they've got some big holes that they need to fill. And frankly, Suzuki was the better of the two catchers this year, and I don't even really feel like it was all that close.
You mean offensively?
Yeah, and defensively too. I mean, I think he's a better player than Tyler Vowers is. You know, his slash line at the end of the year this year, 271, 332, 444. He hit 12 homers, so that's 31 homers over the last 2 years with the Braves. That's pretty solid. And he doesn't really make that much money. I mean, he only made $3.5 million this year. So there are worse things that they could do than re-sign Suzuki. And think of all the huge hits, including the playoffs, that Suzuki had for the Braves this year. Another guy, a totally unsung guy, that they wouldn't have made the playoffs. They wouldn't have won the division without Kurt Suzuki on the team this year. So I think it's an easy. He also is very familiar with all these young starters. So I think there's worse things they could do than re-sign him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the free agent market, you've got Yasmani Grandal and Wilson Ramos, and that's really it. I mean,
and Grandal could not have helped himself with his bad play in the NLCS. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know it's one game. It was, you know, it was two innings, but my God, he just looked dreadful.
But also, the Dodgers aren't giving up. The Dodgers are not giving up for Yasmani, nor are the Phillies going to let those guys go because there aren't better catchers out there, even though what Grandal did. So I agree. I mean, we have other holes. We don't need to fill this. It's what's interesting. I mean, maybe the flip question here is, are we going to have to outbid another team for him? So I saw, you know, Curtis, you mentioned he made 3.8 this year. The market value I saw online for that type of production from a catcher, that what he had the season was $6.8 million. So the question, maybe the question is, are the Braves going to have to pony up a couple extra million a year to keep him, or will somebody outbid him? Or does he feel, you know, inclined to stay here and might take a little bit of a hometown offer?
I mean, I would think he wants to come back, right?
He already said he did.
Yeah. I mean, surely he's had a hell of a good time here. They all did. But it seems like they would have secured him if they were ready to do that. So it's interesting. Yeah. But I agree. I think that he will be just from a, it'll be a cheaper solution and they can spend money on other things. You know, he's right there. The solution is right there. So I agree. But it's a little weird that it hadn't happened yet.
And I will say he's gotten to become one of my favorite guys on the team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
No, me too. All right. So, Ham,
yes.
Either Machado or Harper are on the 25-man opening day roster next year.
Let me ask you guys a quick question because I was going down memory lane. Was Ugla our last like super marquee free agent signing?
Well, he was a trade. And then they extended him. Yeah.
I was trying to think who like was the
well,
big
it was,
splash.
The big splash was BJ.
Yeah.
Five years, 75 million.
Yeah.
Back then it was BJ.
I'm still shell-shocked from that whole era. So I can't I have a hard time imagining the Braves going after and getting someone like this. I mean, maybe the last good one we had was Maddux or McGriff, right, when we got someone that huge to come here. So I just don't see us attracting Machado or Harper. I think there is a team out there that's going to pay Harper, whether he deserves it or not, 30 to 35 a year for 10 years. 30 to 35 million. I don't think Machado's getting that money, but I still don't see him coming here. I think the Dodgers are going to throw a lot of money at him. Obviously, the Red Sox or the Yankees. So we will get a big signing. Maybe it's Bumgarner, but I don't think we're getting either one of those guys.
Curtis, what do you think?
I agree. I don't think either one of them end up here. I think that there's guys that they could get and not have to, if they do, in fact, have $30, $35 million, not have to spend all of that money on one player. And I'm not convinced that if you go out and sign one of these guys, that is the final missing
the silver
component.
Bullet.
You know, I mean, obviously you've got all these starting pitchers that are still coming through the system and that you have a lot of hope for, but they've still got to develop, and that will preclude you from being able to sign a starter. So I don't see it. And I'm still not buying into Liberty Media opening up the checkbook in some huge dramatic way to sign a guy that's going to make $250 million over the course of a contract.
Yeah, so I agree. I think that the Braves will get outbid. I think that they would. I think either of them would be happy to come. I mean, I think that Atlanta has now become a very attractive destination. But I think that the money is going to be a showstopper for them. So, yeah, I'm going to go no on that as well. All right. So, guys, before we get to our awards for 2018, let's go back and look at the predictions, the bets that we made for 2018 back in the middle of March. So, Kurt, walk us through that.
Okay. So the first one, there's roughly 10, 12 here. So the first one was, who would lead the team in homers, Freddie or a combination of Acuna and Markakis? Well, Acuna led the team in homers, so that sort of nullified that. We all went with Freddie.
You're all wrong. Okay, 0 for 1.
0 for 1. The second one, starter, who would lead, who would have the best ERA among starters? It was Folty. Which Ham got. Ham is on the board. I went with Newcomb for some reason. Steve, you even got closer. You picked Gohara.
Oh, I did. I had such high hopes for
you picked
Gohara.
Rex Brothers.
Yes. Coming up next, after Freddie, who would have the second highest WAR on the team? I picked Ender. Ham, you also picked Ender. Steve, you picked Ozzie Albies. The answer, of course, was Ronald Acuna Jr. The fourth question, who would lead the team in saves? It was Vizcaino. And Steve, you and I both picked Minter. Ham, you are once again correct with Boom. Your Vizcaino pick. Up next, trade deadline. Who would be still on the team or who would not still be on the team? First up, Julio Markakis, that fan favorite. Julio Tehran. Steve was the only one that felt that Julio was going to get traded. Ham and I both said no. So, Ham, you and I get the point. Steve, you are yet to score a point. Markakis, same. Steve once again thought Markakis was going to get traded. Ham, you also thought Markakis was going to get traded. So I said no. I get the only point there.
3-2-0.
Yeah. So then we move to Dansby, over and under on his batting average and OBP. It was 265, 325 was the number. He ended up at 238, 304. So we all went under on that one. So that's 2 points for everybody. Then we moved to Camargo. The numbers were 270, 330. As far as over and under, I went under, over. Ham went over, under. Steve went under, under. So I get 1 point. Ham gets 1 point. Steve gets no points because Camargo ended up at 2, whatever he was. I don't know. Homers, Albies, Ozzie Albies. How many homers would he hit? The number was 13. I went under. Ham went under. Steve on the board went over. He hit 13.
Six to five to three.
16, I think he hit. Acuna homers, the
22.
Number was 19.
I'll be at 22.
Okay. The number was 19 for Acuna. We all went over, except you, Steve, not so fast. You went under.
Oh, did I really?
Yes, once again.
What's wrong with me?
Missing out on the point. And then, of course, the fan favorite, the final one, wins. The number was 79. And, of course, Steve, you hit that one. Ham and I both went under. I said 76. Ham said 74. Steve said 80. So barely squeaked over, but he gets the point. So roughly math, Ham ended up winning, sadly, with 7. I got 6. Steve with a sad 4.
Yes.
Yeah, I usually win, I feel like.
No, I don't think Kurt
that's
always wins.
True.
Yeah.
I think Kurt always wins.
Yeah.
You always
Kurt
see,
keeps the score and cheats.
It's true.
You always win the hope meter thing.
Yeah, you do.
Right, because, when we add our scores.
Yes, exactly. Yes. At the end of the year, you have the highest total hope meter.
It's hard to beat tens every week.
All right, guys. So next up we will do our end of the year awards, but first a quick break. All right, our end of the year award. So, Ham, you kind of answered this, so I'm going to start with you. Maybe you'll have the same one. Best series of the year.
Yeah, the Diamondback series.
Yeah. All right. Curtis, how about you?
Yeah, the Diamondback series.
All right, so I went with a different one, but sort of a similar deal. So this was mid-August, following the four-game sweep at the hands of the Rockies. The Braves were a half a game up on the Phillies, and they went to Pittsburgh. And they swept Pittsburgh that series, and game one was the call up of Bryce Wilson, who outpitched Chris Archer. The Braves won 1-0 that night. And they, like I said, they swept those three games in Pittsburgh, and they left Pittsburgh up 3 games on the Phillies. So that was my best series of the year.
That was right before the Red Sox series, right? Did you say that?
Yeah, I think that it was.
I think we came home to play the Red Sox, and then there was Arizona.
All right, so Hammy, Team Cy Young, who do you got?
Folty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, he just felt like the most dominant. He felt like he added, I mean, I think his WAR was 3.4. He had the highest WAR for a pitcher. He was our best pitcher. Yeah, easy.
Curtis?
Same. I don't think it's really much question, to be quite honest. Maybe Anibal Sanchez, but it's Folty going away.
Yeah, I mean, and I was doing WAR from Fangraphs. I mean, Folty was 3.9 to Anibal's 2.4, although their xFIP was really quite close. Folty's was 377 and Anibal's was 381. But yeah, I mean, it has got to be Folty. So, Curtis, your least valuable player of the year.
Yeah, I hate to say it. And it wasn't that he had a season that was just awful, but it just was pedestrian. And we needed a lot more from our opening day starter. And he's probably not going to be on the team anymore. And in fact, he didn't even merit a start in the postseason. And it's Julio Teheran. He once again had moments where he was brilliant. He had flashes where you really buy into his talent and everything else. But it was just so inconsistent. The home runs, the walks, it was just, he killed us in so many departments. For that reason, I feel like he was the LVP because we needed something more from a guy who was our theoretical number one starter.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not a bad call. And certainly he did not live up to expectations, and he really personified that up and down inconsistency that we had from the starters at times and the bullpen for sure. So yeah. Hammy, what do you got?
So I gave a tip to this earlier, but Rex Brothers, he faced two batters all year and he walked both of them. So by definition, he literally produced the least amount of value to the Braves. He didn't even qualify. But if he needed enough appearances to qualify, I don't know. I mean, I agree with the Teheran thing. I certainly thought about him. And then I felt like more than anything, the bullpen let us down throughout the year the most. And you may guess who my punching bag. So I'm going to pick someone from the bullpen. So I picked Luke Jackson just because I love to hate him. But it felt like any time we needed him to do well, he blew the save, got the L, couldn't – you know, couldn't eat innings like we needed him to. So he is sort of the honorary representative of the bullpen who, for the most part, killed us all season long.
Yeah, you know, so I feel bad about both of these that I'm going to say, because I was looking at the bullpen, and really, to me, it was
Sam Freeman.
Oh, my God. No, Peter Moylan. It was Moylan. You know, I mean, Moylan, God, they really ran him out there so much, and he just was not good. But I give him a runner-up, and I feel even worse about this one because there were certainly a million reasons why it came true. But I went with Luis Gohara because I expected so much from him. I think that the team kind of expected, you know, at least in February or March, that he was going to be part of the starting rotation, and he just, you know, never could get on track. I mean, he pitched 19 and two-thirds innings throughout the entire year and produced a 5.15 xFIP. He just was not good. I really hope he can turn it around and either produce for the team next year or bring something back.
Well, and that's the other thing. His trade value is dropped dramatically, I would imagine. Sure. His issues with his weight and everything else, not nearly what we're going to get back as we would have prior to this season.
We need him to come back and be able to pitch two or three innings and be dominant and get his trade value. Because, yeah, we're getting nothing for him right now. Absolutely right.
And I didn't see that he was pitching anywhere. I mean, maybe he'll pitch in one of the Latin American leagues or something like that. I guess he's probably too old for the Arizona League. That's more prospect stuff, right?
Well, he's certainly not on the Arizona Fall League list. So, yeah, I'm not sure what they're doing with him this offseason. It's a good question. All right, and we'll end with this. Curtis, your MVP for the year.
It's Freddie Freeman, because I think he's by far the best player the Braves have and produced at an MVP level for the league for a good half plus year of the season. But, you know, I mean, there's guys that like Markakis who really produced so much for the team all year long. Fulte was obviously a huge component of the team ending up being the number one starting pitcher, although his postseason was not that great. But until otherwise, Freddie Freeman is the reigning champ for the MVP of the Braves and will be there for until Ronald Acuna supersedes that.
Yeah. So I had the same argument in my head. But for the sake of argument, I think it is Acuna this year. You know, I mean, Freeman was certainly the first half MVP. But, you know, maybe to take a different angle on what most valuable player means, I think without Acuna and what he did after the All-Star break and becoming our leadoff hitter and just injecting the entire team with his enthusiasm, elevating their play, he is the reason we're in the postseason more than anybody else on the Braves. I think he is more than anyone else is the reason that we got to 90 wins. So obviously Freeman is the rock before all rocks to this team. And he really was just otherworldly this season. I mean, he finished second in the NL in majors and hits. It's crazy the season that he had that was just not on the radar. But I think Acuna is our most valuable player this year.
Yeah, I kind of took your approach, Ham. So I agree, Curtis, that Freddie overall is the team MVP, best guy on the team. But if I was going to break it up by halves, I would actually have Markakis in the first half because he was kind of the most steady guy in the first half. And then Acuna in the second half, because, Ham, you're right. If Acuna does not burst onto the scene and do what he did in the one hole and for power and average and just all of it, the team does not get over the hump and get to the playoffs. So, I'm sort of going with all three as a spread throughout the year. And, yeah, look, Acuna could easily be it next year. You know, Acuna could be the best player on the team.
He hit 26 homers and played, what, three-quarters of the season less?
Yeah.
In his first season.
No, it's very exciting to think about.
Yes.
All right. So, guys, next week we're going to wrap up the season and look ahead to 2019 with a full show with David O'Brien from The Athletic. And until then, that is the show tonight. So remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. You can always find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. And please be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Brave!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.